All right. Welcome back to A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Brzezinski, get to sit down with interesting people from a myriad of fields. We get to talk about what they do, what makes them tick, and some of the challenges and foibles that they face in their field. Today with me, I'm sitting with Rebecca Such. Rebecca, would you introduce yourself, what you do, and where you're from?
Absolutely. My name is Rebecca Such. I'm a freelance writer and editor, and I'm from SoCal, but I live in Bellingham, and that is home.
SoCal, Southern California. Mm-hmm. So what brought you up here?
Originally, it was just my college plan fell through, and I moved in with a sister up here, and then I fell in love with Washington, and I stayed.
That's a story I've heard from a lot of people who've come to the West Coast, where they're like, yeah, I was going to go back to the prairies where the wind hurts my face, but I decided not to because the wind doesn't hurt my face here.
Yep, that sounds exactly right, except it's the heat.
Yeah. I was just talking to a lady this morning who is also from Los Angeles, Southern California area. And she's like, yeah, I can't go back.
Never.
It's not worth it.
Yep.
Okay, so today we're talking about the freelance writer and editor field, mm-hmm. but specifically the industry, how it is right now, mm-hmm. and what's changing. Now, the creative content space is booming. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because I'm in this field and I'm making content for you lovely people. But how has the creative landscape changed as you've seen it over the last 5-10 years?
Ooh, it's changing constantly in little ways and big ways, especially with AI, as I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, there's a lot of changing trends in terms of what people are looking for and also what kind of technologies and platforms they're using. And also just a lot of digital content means people are reading and experiencing it in different ways. Mm. So, you know, AI is its own thing, but even if we're just talking about trends, there's a fact of like people want different content, people want marketing done differently, which is a lot of what I like to do. Mm. And people are going to take it in different ways. So you have to look at what platforms are the best, social media and otherwise. You have to look at pull marketing versus push marketing, which is essentially just, all right, am I trying to just pull them in with who I am and my own personality and completely separate content? Or am I going to tell them, this is what I want you to buy? Mm-hmm. Which both of them have their place.
Yep.
So it's very much, there's a lot of changing trends in every side of writing right now and new fields of writing.
Yeah, for sure. I know for video specifically, one of the things that is just hammered home over and over and over again is that traditional marketing doesn't work the way it once had, specifically with younger generations. One of the things is that people have this idea that younger generations are so cynical to advertisements that they just don't want them. And that's not true. It's a silly example, but someone pointed this out to me a little while ago, but like the video game industry, which is now, I think, like the largest media industry in the world right now, outside of adult video content. Mm-hmm. Yeah, figure that one out, folks. But they have their own award shows every few months. And all these award shows are is like 60 minutes of actual awards, but then 3 to 4 hours of commercials. People love being advertised too, especially young folks. The trend is, though, it seems to be that younger folks especially like stories. Mm-hmm. They like authenticity in their marketing, and they like being told the experiences that these products offer. Mm-hmm. They don't like saying, hey, it's 50% off, or hey, look at the new item that we just got. They want the story behind it and the stories that come out of it. Mm-hmm. Have you found that the writing world has been similarly affected in that way?
Absolutely. A lot of what's important nowadays is relatability. People want to feel seen and understood and related to. And one of the complicated things about that is target audience is very important. Mm-hmm. So nowadays, everyone wants inclusivity and wants to be included, and we absolutely champion that. But it's also a matter of what is my target audience and how do I include them in a specific way where they feel extra seen and important. Mm. But yeah, that's definitely a huge thing is people want authenticity. I think people have started to realize more and more each generation that you don't just trust what you see in an advertisement. And so people now have become very hesitant to trust push marketing, and that's reasonable. And so people want to see, I can trust you, you're real, you're willing to be vulnerable, I understand you and you understand me. And so that's a big part of marketing right now and a big part of writing.
Yeah, hugely so. So let's talk about the personal brand aspect, because the trust factor is huge. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is fascinating, even though I don't understand it at all, is that you have these social media types who are like, Mr. Beast is the big one right now. Mm-hmm. And he's a genuine entrepreneur. He's going out there and he's doing all sorts of different ventures. He has a chocolate bar now and people flood to it. Mm-hmm. I did not know this until someone pointed this out to me a little while ago. How do you think trust is communicated to clients or potential clients through writing? How do you do that?
I mean, there's a myriad of ways to do it. That's a big but good question. Mm-hmm. I'd say a really important thing right now, especially for companies and nonprofits, is putting something very personal in there, like mm-hmm. making it a personalized thing where you are being authentic about who you are and where the brand started and why you're here. So you have to make your writing about more than just what you want them to do. It has to be a lot about this is why you should do this for us, why we are the people you should work with. And on top of that, everyone has their own writing style and personality, and you really need to make sure that that comes through in your writing. Mm. You need to have a unique voice. You can't just sound like a marketing robot. No one wants to hear that. If they feel like you have something of substance to you, they'll cling to that a lot more quickly. So your writing has to be engaging, and engagement is like the number one word for everything I do.
Mm. So let's move on to the representation point, because that's another mm-hmm. thing that you brought up. The representation and the inclusivity of making sure that your readers, I'm sure, feel engaged, that they mm-hmm. feel like they're being spoken to. Mm-hmm. What are some of the inclusive trends that we're seeing in writing right now?
The inclusive trends. Let's see. So definitely people are, I mean, obviously it's great. People are very aware of how everyone is different, and there's a lot of emphasis on neurodiversity, things like that. Mm. And part of that is people are paying attention to how people absorb content. And so it's been really interesting seeing people adjust based on like, oh, people are ADHD. They might not read this the same way. They might not go through this the same way. And especially, I mean, that's a mixture of also just a new generation taking in digital content. Mm. But yeah, trying to be inclusive as to how people experience the content is really interesting. So you have to, people are spreading out their marketing so that it's going to be taken in different ways. So for people who have less attention span or are less comfortable with certain forms of media, you make something completely different. So everyone's making a larger variety of kind of the same thing. And that's been a really interesting thing to see. So video formats in long and short, and writing, you'll do a long article, but you'll do shorter posts in this way. It's multi-platform, but you're trying to send the same message in a way that people can absorb more comfortably.
That's interesting, because I'm sure there's almost an angle to that too, where like you could take long form blog content and you just segment it in ways where it's easy to understand. Okay, I've made this much progress mm-hmm. in the blog, or we're now at item 5 of a 10 item list. Mm-hmm. Just making it a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit more engaging for mm-hmm. the reader. I guess that is the crux of it, isn't it?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really interesting, I've been trained specifically in writing for the web. I took extra training to make sure I understood really what the difference is. And when we're talking about just writing for the web, people naturally read it differently. And mm-hmm. so you have to be very aware of that. And so subheadings are a big thing right now. You have to break it up. But also, I mean, the fact is, statistically, they believe that only 80% of people will not read past a headline. Mm. So they'll read the title of something, and more than likely they won't read more. And so you have to make that title really engaging if you want to get more than 20%. And then everything they need to know needs to be up front. And so especially with journalism, that's one of the hardest things as someone who wrote narrative fiction mostly before, is you have to learn how to put the news at the top. You need to know what the story is, and you need to tell your readers at the beginning. Mm. And the rest is kind of additional information. And if you get really good at it, you can make them still want to read more. Mm. And that includes even just with your paragraphs. The first line of that paragraph is important and tells you exactly what you need to know. And then the rest is further information explaining it in more detail or its relevance.
I think this started with journalism as well about 7 years back, where you would have your headline and then you'd have like 3 bullet points that are summarizing the key things that you need mm-hmm. to understand about the event. Then you have your paragraph that kind of gives a brief overview, and then you have the full article.
Yeah.
And it's such a brilliant tactic that does seem to have just kind of come about organically, because people do read differently. Mm-hmm. You would never see that in the New York Times physical paper.
Yeah. I mean, people really do read differently, because there's so much on your phone and so much distraction and so much that can change. And so you need to keep them engaged as much as you can, but you have to accept that people aren't going to look at something and plan to focus on it as much online. Because if you have a book or a newspaper in your hands, you are in this with intention. You want to be here. You want to read this. You're going to set aside the focus for it. And if you have your phone open, you're going to get a text message and you're going to go to that. Or maybe you just came upon this article, but it's not something that's important to you. Like, you just have to be aware of that. And it's just created a whole new version of things because we have to adjust, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think anyone under the age of 35 ever picks up a newspaper unless they're at like a restaurant waiting room. And they're like, I need to pass the time and my phone's about to die. I need to save it. Okay, here's a newspaper. Let's see what's going on. I feel old fashioned. So no, absolutely. Okay, so let's move on to the fun topic that all those really cool people on the internet won't stop talking about. Let's talk about AI.
Woohoo! Yay! My favorite.
So we're both in creative fields. We feel the pressure of AI coming in around us. I feel for writers especially, though, because it seemed right away like writing and editing were going to be so immediately and profoundly hit. I remember reading stories within like 6 months of ChatGPT going mainstream, of Amazon getting flooded with books that were just generated and being flooded into the market because they're like, hey, I can make 40 books in a day and I don't care.
Yeah.
One of these might make money. Great. So let's talk about how AI is changing your field. Do you feel like the writing field as a whole is going to start shrinking because of ChatGPT?
It's hard to say because there's a lot of different sides to the story. I think it might. I think that is a risk and a fear. And part of that is because of the fear of AI. People are turning away from it because they're afraid to get into the industry, which is reasonable and understandable. These are scary new times, but change is always scary. I think it's important to recognize that, like we talked about in a past episode, AI is new and it's scary in a new way because it's creating content as opposed to past things where the innovation was finding a new way to present content. But our industries have always adapted. There has always been something new where we thought we're going to go out of business. No one's ever going to want to use us again. And instead, the industry boomed. And so as much as I'm not saying use AI, I'm not going to use AI. I think we're going to be able to adjust. There's already new forms of writing coming out because of AI. Since AI, there's new forms of writing all the time. There's always going to be a need for writers. I don't think that's going to ruin anything. I think it could shrink. But I, like I said, I think part of that's just going to be the fear and going through this change that no one feels certain of right now.
What are some of those changes that we're seeing in writing right now? You're saying that there's new kinds of writing that are almost emerging because of AI.
Yeah. So one example is UA or UX or UI writing. And so that's kind of trying to think of how to describe it, not too visually, but like every app that you open, there's little buttons and things that you need to see to direct you through the app. And that's what that is. So you need a button that says next page or error codes, things like that. And I know that doesn't sound very creative, but some aspects of it really are, and it's a new challenging form of writing that needs to be done very carefully. And especially with, like, we're talking about the relatability and that trend, people want this done in a way that is creative, that is going to catch attention. So that's a new form that's kind of starting to boom right now. It's building really strongly, but even just chatbots. I mean, I read an article recently about someone who writes for a chatbot. And they were like, I know this is technically AI because I'm not directly answering anyone's question, but I'm writing these words. I'm telling it what to say. And I have all these exciting new challenges all the time. There's never going to be enough things answered that they don't want me to work for them anymore. And so there are different forms of writing coming from that. And you don't have to work for them or anything like that. But it's just good to know that there are options and that the industry isn't going to disappear. We're still going to be needed in more than these ways, but still.
I remember we saw this most specifically with some of the image generation models. There's the self-feeding process that they were falling into because, of course, AI is such a devouring, all-consuming beast where it's just looking for materials that it can examine and learn from, which has got its own values. It's how these things expand so quickly. But then what they found with the image generating models is that they were then consuming so much AI generated content. And so that started this devolving cycle of what art it was generally reproducing. And then that only furthered the cycle until eventually they were trying to pull these models away from the AI generated content in the first place, because it just degenerates everything. All that to say, is there still the glimmer of hope that writers, real people, will be able to bring a truly novel sense of originality that AIs will never be able to capture?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much that AI really can't capture. And I mean, it's proven every time you put something into ChatGPT, really. But something that I've really seen a lot are my professors in my degree program that I've been in. They are very good about pointing out AI is a tool. And if you use it, you have to use it very carefully, but also it's never going to do the job you want it to do. And so they've had us use it in small ways to be like, do this, then put it through AI and see how much it messes up, and then do it better. And I think it's really important to know that writing style, voice, tone, theme, things like that, ChatGPT will never completely get right. It's not just about accuracy. It's every single person, brand, company, everything has its own voice, its own style, and its own message it wants to get across. And a writer knows how to do that naturally, but they also have a creative aspect that they bring to the table that AI won't have. In terms of, like, a writer can come to me and say, oh, this is what I want. Or not a writer, sorry. A client can come to me and say, this is what I want. And I'll say, okay, that's fantastic in theory. That's realistically not going to work for you. And that's part of my job. I'm also a consultant, essentially. I'm telling you, I'm trained in all these fields. I know what to do with these. And that's realistically not going to work, either for your budget or for the formatting you're looking at or this layout. Like, I'm writing a newsletter, and one of the hardest things is I have an idea of what I want to say, but I have to fit it into this specific box that's arranged this way. And on top of that, sometimes you think you know what you want, but it doesn't actually work for your brand. Because if you're not a writer or you haven't been doing this very long, there's a lot you don't understand about how to get the message across properly in a way that's engaging and knows your target audience, which is another thing AI is always going to struggle with, is the very specifics of your target audience. So you really have to know how to personalize everything. And an AI isn't personal. It's not a person. So there's that really essential aspect of having a person involved. And so I don't think AI is ever going to get rid of us.
So with the exception of writing fiction literature, because I'm sure that will always have a space where humans, I don't think AI can ever really do that. Are there any other parts of the editing or writing world that will never be truly captured by AI? They really will stand alone as human-only spaces.
Yeah, that's a great question. Human-only spaces is pretty hard, I think. Editing, you will always need a person for. I mean, not necessarily in the same way or fully throughout, but even if you put everything through ChatGPT or anything like that for editing, or even Grammarly, a lot of the time it's going to get it wrong or it's going to mess up the style or the tone completely. But in writing, really, as much as there's going to be a lot of things where people can use AI, I think a lot of people already are seeing the value in having a writer. And so there are a lot of spaces that maybe should be human only, and people are willing to accept a little less quality. But we're already seeing kind of the fallout of that. There's a lot of people who are struggling to keep up because they think AI is going to save me money because it's cheaper than using a person. But your engagement is not the same because it doesn't know how to engage with people. It's not a person. And it's not evolved enough, and it probably never will be to be as accurate as it needs to be. And also in journalism, you have to have people on that. You have to have people interviewing people to make sure everything's expressed properly. You need to make sure all the facts are right. And all of these things have bias. Not all of them, excuse me. Some of them are known to not have bias, quote unquote, in theory. But yeah, you have to make sure everything's factual and unbiased. And so journalism, things like that, you really can't rely on ChatGPT or any kind of AI at all.
But on X, I asked Grok to explain a situation to me, and it gave me an answer. You tell me that that's not exhaustively correct?
You know, I'm sorry to tell you, Cole. I don't think I'd trust it.
That's fair. All right, so inversely then, what are the kinds of fields that you think human writers or editors should just say preemptively, you know what, AI can have this one. This one AI can actually do just fine.
I don't think any of them, personally. I don't think there's any that it's like hands off, let them have it. Mm-hmm. Like, especially nowadays where people trust things less and less. And so like they want to feel personally connected to it, and AI, there's always something a little off about it. And I feel like people can usually tell. People don't realize that it's still kind of obvious when something's written with AI sometimes. And I don't know, I don't think there's anything that AI can truly 100% of the time do better, or it's pointless to put a person in there instead. Maybe some short form content, it's kind of not necessary. Maybe social media posts you could back off of, but even then it really depends on what you're trying to put forward, because you need it to be personal. You need it to fit you and your brand. And some people will look at this and say, oh, this sounds really great, but not realize that it doesn't sound like them. And people are going to notice, and they're going to lose trust really fast. It takes one little error for people to lose trust. I am reading a book right now where there's a lot of people that say, oh, we have this theory that this is them testing out how to write a book with AI and see how people respond. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And I read one single word in it that was like, that doesn't sound like this character. And I don't believe the theory, but I'm sitting here like, how much did they maybe use it as a tool? How much did they use it to adjust their writing? Because that doesn't sound like that character. It takes one word sometimes to ruin someone's trust. So it's very important to keep that in mind.
It is interesting. I was talking to an AI specialist, and I do get a little bit of a kick of that because it's such a new field that we already have specialists. But he made a good point where AI does often actually have tells, where language models, they tend to overuse certain words, or they'll use certain syntactic structures, like using dashes. So not to say it's always, if you ever see an email where someone's using dashes, it's not strictly AI, but it might be. And he was telling me about how, like, he does this for himself, but he helps other people set up these email systems where people are corresponding to their agent, whatever that might be, but they're never actually talking to the person. They're talking to an AI model. And for small tasks, I'm sure it works great. But I remember when I was working with him for another thing, working with these systems, I never got my booking links. We had a whole bunch of stuff fall through. I don't know. There's something about the human touch and troubleshooting. They will
absolutely.
They will never go to waste.
Yep. Never, ever.
Okay. So let's talk about the kinds of projects that you get to take on. So you do a lot of stuff for marketing. You do a lot of stuff for journalism. What's some of the funner projects, though?
Ooh, I think for me, my favorites are, I don't know, anything where, and I know I shouldn't say this because it's not technically marketed on my website, but I love doing design on top of my writing. So my Hunger versus Hunger newsletter is a great example of that. It was my first newsletter, and it's very creative, and I got to choose the colors and everything and the little images and graphics. And it's a very complete thing for me because I'm not fitting my work into someone else's work. So that's been really exciting for me. But I love anything where it's about, I don't know, being a person and connecting with people. I love marketing in a way that people don't expect, because everyone's like, oh, marketing, you're just trying to sell a product. And I'm like, no, this is about finding the right people and connecting them with what works for them and doing it in a way that everyone feels like a part of the process. Like, Hunger versus Hunger has been great because I'm like, hey, you have a very specific demographic that really is interested in what you're doing. And so how can I find the best way to connect them to this, to share it with their friends and just help them be a part of this really great thing? So I really love anything that's about engagement and a target audience and finding the right way in any creative degree possible to target them in a more wholesome way than people would think before.
That's solid. You've also made mention that you do a little bit of editing for people who are working on fiction. What's that like?
Oh, it's incredible. I love doing it. Especially the writing community in fiction, in all writing really, but especially in fiction, is very, everyone's creative and connected. And a lot of what fiction is that people don't realize is kind of a way to separate yourself from the world while still writing about the world around you and the people around you. And so it's like reading how someone else experiences the world, but with a separate world or with separate people. And so it's really fun to make those connections. It's a lot of work. It's very in-depth, and people's writing is very personal to them, which I personally experience. I mean, the first time I submitted feedback, I was like, that went amazing. And people said a lot of nice things, but why do I still kind of want to cry right now? Like, this is your baby. You've worked very hard. And like I said, it's kind of a part of you and your way of expressing what you're experiencing in your life in a way. And so it's also something you have to be very careful about while still being very honest, because if you're not totally honest about, I don't think this quite works, the story is not going to be as good as it could be. And that's going to be kind of on you. And you're also attached to that. You're representing yourself through that work. But on top of that, if you're a little too honest, or you're honest in not quite the right way, you're going to really piss someone off.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a woman, and she was working on, self-publishing is amazing these days. What you're able to do now was not possible 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But she put together this manuscript for her book, and she wanted to find an editor, and she found one. It was through a connection of a friend and real editor. She works at one of the local universities here. And I remember there would be times where she would get chapter feedbacks, and she's like, I don't think I like this editor. Of course, she's like, she's great. She's given me a great deal too since we're friends, and she likes the kind of book that I'm putting together, and her reviews are solid, but I don't like her still. And then she would come over every time, and she's like, it's good that I see her again. It reminds me. She's wonderful. She's lovely. She's doing such a good job, but she's so critical of my book. No, and it's got to be a pretty interesting love-hate relationship at times.
It definitely is. Even with my news editor, the first time he gave me feedback on a story, and keep in mind, this was my first time doing actual journalism, so I knew I would need help. I was just like, oh my gosh, so nitpicky. And like, I don't know, like he could have said something nice about this, blah, blah, blah. And then by the time I finished doing the edits, I'm like, okay, he was right. And this is so much better already. And like my writing improved astronomically after that first one. And by the end, he was like, wow, great job. And now he's like, thank you. You take my notes so well. And like, this is incredible. Good job. And I'm just like, I love hearing all the good things from him now, because I listened to what he said and it helped me astronomically. It's hard to hear, but sometimes you need to hear it.
When I was working on my master's degree, my my advisor, who's of course, like, they function as editors, they help function as guides, as developers. And I remember there were so many times where she's like, and I got stories about my master's about why it was going the way that it did, but she had this wonderful backbone to say, this needs to stop. You need to do something entirely different now. Like, we need to pivot. We need to pivot hard. But then they were always great by saying like, hey, here are the resources. Here's what you need. Here's what you could do. You still have to do it yourself. I can only guide you. But here's how I'm going to do all that I can to set you up for success.
Absolutely. And something that I try to remind people when I first start talking to them about editing work is that it's not my job to write your work for you. It's my job to give you professional suggestions. This is still your writing. You have complete autonomy. I do not change your work for you. That's something that bothers me, is people who are not real editors that say they can will change your work. That's why there's a review feature.
Yep.
You can click yes or no, whether you accept it or not. But at the end of the day, this is my professional opinion I'm offering you. And my point of view, you do not have to follow anything I say. You can pay me and walk away and change nothing at all. I gave you my opinion. That's what you paid for.
Yep. Let's just hope that you take my opinion with, you know, the value that it's given.
Yeah. It's valuable.
Yes. Okay. So let's then talk about the freelance field. So freelancing can be pretty competitive. How have you been carving out a niche for yourself? Have you found that you have to really focus in on specific kinds of work, or do you have other tactics to grow your market?
Yeah. So I think what's hard is there's a lot of debate around whether you need a niche or you need to just take whatever job you can when you first start. And for me, part of my struggle is that I love all the forms of writing. I'm a real nerd about just the craft of writing itself. And I love the challenge of doing something new. So I very much went the route of take on any work. As long as it's something I want to do and it's challenging, I will do any kind. But a lot of people do say, like, you should specialize. And I think that really depends on who you are and what opportunities you have in front of you. So at the end of the day, opportunity, I think, is the key word. And putting yourself out there to find those proper opportunities. I have gone out of my way to network all the time. My friends joke that I'm the networking queen now, because everywhere I go, I'm like, oh, I know the person who does marketing for that. Oh, I know the person who does that. And so I put myself in certain places where I know this is the kind of person I might want to work with. And this is where I find that community I want to be a part of. And that's how I found it. So I haven't necessarily forced my way into any industry. I've just put myself in the right position to find that work. And so I've started hanging out with a lot of people in nonprofits. I've met a lot of people who work in nonprofits, and especially a lot of people who work in creative industries. And that kind of has put me in a position to take on a lot of that work. And I make the connections naturally. I don't like to force myself on anybody and be like, here, take my writing. Here's my card. I mean, I love giving people my business card because I think it's really cute.
It's a very nice card.
Thank you. I am pretty proud. But like, I really like to just let people get to know me and hear me talk about my work in just a general conversation. And usually that's what gets me my work. So yeah, I think it's all about setting yourself up for the opportunities you want more than anything.
And it is amazing. And it's one of those things, and everyone's got these stories where it's just about being at the right place at the right time. And a lot of that is luck. But here's the thing. Luck only becomes so much of a factor if you only have so many opportunities to pitch yourself. If you're going out there, you're selling yourself, you're networking, those opportunities, those wonderful lucky moments kind of happen a bit more often, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah. One of the things I was most scared to do was start putting myself in a new position, putting myself out there in new ways. And once I did, it was like, boom, 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 things started happening. I was so afraid of being disappointed or something going wrong that I didn't put myself out there for a while. And when I started freelancing, I was like, oh, that's got to change. And the moment I did, opportunities opened up. And it's just incredible how that works. I went to an engaged with the local media event run by the Chamber of Commerce one day just to get ideas of how to be a part of journalism and media when I haven't gotten in the door. And just asking a question, someone heard my question, found my website, emailed me and said, hey, have you heard about the Salish Current? I could connect you. And next thing I knew, I had an email connection with the executive editor. And I was like, I don't even have a story to pitch you. So I'm just going to kind of tell you about myself. And next thing I knew, I was part of a team of freelancers doing journalism, which is supposed to be like the hardest field to start in with writing. And here I am.
No, connections. It's always just fun to say, hey, I know a guy.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a big deal. I know the people around town. Yeah.
I went to the Bells game the other day and my friend was with me and she saw the hamster and she had no idea there even was a team here until that day. And she was like, wow, that's super cool. Whoever's in marketing knows what they're doing. And I was like, oh, I think I know the marketing girl. We go in and the marketing girl that I know is handing out flyers. And she's like, hey, how are you doing? And I was like, I told you, I knew the marketing person. Felt real good.
I got to get my wife to one of those games too. I got tickets sitting on my desk actually right now. Got to
get on it.
Summer's going by. Okay. Well, Rebecca, that's been our time today. Thank you for joining me for this conversation. Where can the good people find you?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. People can find me on suchcreativework.com, spelled S-U-T-C-H. The pun is intended. That's my last name. But from there, you can find my portfolio, my website. My website, obviously. Sorry, my social media. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, viewers, for joining us for another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Everything. I hope that you've enjoyed this recording as much as I have. So until next time, take care and be well. Bye-bye.